Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Akhfaei. As the crisis in Syria marked its first year recently, one thing that everyone agrees on is that the deaths of innocent people needs to stop. And for that to happen, violence needs to stop. That is, if the United States, EU, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar stop arming and funding the armed groups fighting the government, which puts into question whether they do want peace in Syria and whether they want UN Arab League envoy Kofi Annan's six-point peace plan to work. The situation looks bleak since the Syrian army is confiscating U.S. and foreign weapons and are engaged with them almost on a daily basis. In this news analysis, we will discuss whether the deadline, April 12, 6 a.m. Damascus time, will be the start of a new chapter in Syria's history or a turn for the worse.
Heavy explosions and gunfire continue to shake Syria. Fighting carries on between the government forces and what Damascus calls foreign-backed armed terrorist groups. Syria has lashed out at some foreign countries it says are giving weapons to such groups.
The Qataris, the Saudis, and Turkey are providing these armed groups with weapons. This is a violation of the international law.
The fighting rages on as the date for a UN Arab League brokered ceasefire draws closer. The UN Arab League envoy Kofi Annan says the government forces and the armed groups must stop hostilities at 6 a.m. April 12, though the deadline is April the 10th.
We must commence a comprehensive political dialogue between the Syrian government and the whole spectrum of the Syrian opposition. This must enable a Syrian-led political transition to a democratic, plural political system in which citizens are equal regardless of their affiliations or ethnicities or beliefs.
Syria has agreed to a six-point peace plan hammered out by Annan to end the unrest in the country. The opposition says it has serious doubts about the Syrian government's commitment to the Annan peace plan. But in a letter to the diplomat, the government complains that, quote, acts of terrorism by the armed groups are on the rise ahead of the truce deadline. Veto-holding member of the UN Security Council, Russia, has warned against any ultimatums for Syria and against giving weapons to the armed groups fighting the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
The Syrian government has accepted Annan's proposal and has begun implementing them. And it is very important not to undermine this process with ultimatums and threats.
Meanwhile, latest reports have exposed exaggerations and fabrications about the situation on the ground. A journalist, who only recently resigned from the Qatari government-funded Al Jazeera over the channel's conduct, has also accused it of telling lies about the developments in Syria.
The reality on the ground in Syria is different from what is portrayed by Al Jazeera. The reality is much different. The truth is now just an opinion of the director. In Al Jazeera, I can even lie to benefit the production.
This is not the first time Al Jazeera is accused of distorting facts about Syria. It uses Syria, the war within, as header of its stories on the violence in the country. This is while Damascus says many militants from other countries have infiltrated on foreign countries' behalf to fight the Syrian government.
Let me introduce our guest from the Syrian Social Club. Issa Shire joins us from London. We have former Pentagon official Michael Malouf joining us from Washington and director of the Center for Research on Globalization, Professor Michel Chesedovsky, joins us from Montreal via Skype. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me go first to you, Mr. Chesedovsky. The UN Arab League Special Envoy Kofi Annan couldn't be clearer in his message yesterday. Violence and deaths need to stop. Who is preventing that right now from happening?
Well, I think that the Kofi Annan peace proposal is flawed from the outset because it does not clearly identify the sides involved in the ceasefire. It identifies the government on the one hand and the so-called opposition on the other hand. But the fact of the matter is that they are now NATO special forces from NATO countries, not to mention Qatari special forces and intelligence operatives, which are collaborating with the so-called Free Syrian Army in terms of logistics, military advice, the supply of weapons. And this is in violation of international law, because these are foreign forces on Syrian soil. The Syrian government has pointed to the role of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, but it has not mentioned the fact that there are British and French special forces on the ground collaborating with the terrorists against government forces, so that you can't have a ceasefire demanded by members of the international community, namely France and Britain, and have special forces from those countries on the ground collaborating with the Free Syrian Army. I should mention another issue. It is now clearly documented, even in Western media sources, that the Free Syria Army is integrated by death squads, which are involved in extrajudicial assassinations of people in the various communities. This was documented with regard to Homs. We're talking about assassinations. We're talking about ethnic cleansing directed against the Christian community in particular. Crimes against humanity are being committed by foreign forces which have integrated the Free Syrian Army. Mm-hmm. They are complicit in these war crimes.
Well, let me ask Issa Shire to come in here. What do you think about what Professor Chosudovsky said there? It sounds like you have international law on one hand, but yet you have another reality on the ground that is backed by these countries such as the United States, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and some countries from Europe.
I agree with your guest on some of the points, and I must highlight that although these are true, we must follow every single initiative that could bring a political solutions to the crisis in Syria. What we have seen is from the onset of this crisis, certain members of the oppositions, extreme ones, backed by their supporters from Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and some Western governments, have tried to undermine every single political initiatives that could bring a solution to the crisis of Syria, fulfilling the aspirations of the Syrian peoples. They have tried to undermine the calls for dialogues by the Syrian government at the beginning. They have tried to undermine the reforms or the new constitution that the Syrian government has initiated. They have also tried to undermine the referendum, which for the constitution, although over 7.5 million Syrians have voted for it, a clear indication of the aspiration of the Syrian people for a political solutions. They have also undermined the role of the Arab League monitoring group who came to Syria, and so for real, the facts on the ground that there was armed militants killing and mutilating innocent civilians and destroying public properties on a large scale that we only witnessed when there was a civil war. These militant groups have come, some of them have infiltrated from outside Syria.
And now, they're undermining this, as you mentioned, in so many different occasions. For what reason?
For their own agenda. They want a war, a civil war, that could actually destroy the role of Syria in the region. They see Syria as a country which plays a major role by its stance against the Zionism in the region. It stands with the all of the victims of the Middle East, Syria being the host country for many millions of victims in the region, some from Iraq, some from Lebanon, some from Somalia, and the Palestinian people.
Okay, good. Syria has let me bring in Michael Malouf. I'm sorry to jump in to get some views from him. Michael Malouf, you're a military man. What do you make of Russia's recent warning urging the West not to arm the opposition, saying that the armed groups will never be able to defeat the Syrian army even if it's, quote, armed to the teeth, and arming them would cause slaughter for years?
Well, Foreign Minister Lavrov made that point in saying that the that Russia would not vote for in favor of the UN Security Council resolution, and he's right. The resolution only addressed the Syrian government. It did not address the opposition and the arming of the opposition, and unfortunately, what's now occurring is in Syria. And even the threat to Iran by the Israelis is having a very serious impact on the Russians in terms of their own vital interests in the Middle East. So they see this they see the crisis in Syria as a much larger problem regionally, also for their own vital security interests. And their point is well taken that as long as you have outsiders aiding and abetting the opposition and arming them. I mean, when the opposition first started out, they didn't have very much in terms of arms. Now they have very exotic weapons. Well, where did they get those weapons? They had to come from the outside, and that you had Saudi Arabia arming and providing that kind of assistance, also to the Sunnis in provinces in Iraq. So you're using. Westernmost provinces in Iraq now are being used as a springboard for the opposition to go in and wreak havoc on the government. The government of Syria has a right to defend itself, has a right to maintain law and order. And as long as you have opposition members shooting at them, the crisis is going to continue. The shooting is going to go on unabated. And I think that this actually plays into the hands of the insidious U.S. plan to try to upset the regime. And the reason for that is that it's all aimed at trying to overthrow al-Assad and to divorce the regime from the Syrian government from any influence and relationship with Iran.
So wait a minute. So back to the question, though, when Russia says that even if you're armed to the teeth in terms of the opposition, that you're never going to be able to defeat the Syrian army, what does that mean? Does that mean that this is Russia's way of saying you're going to play this game with arming the opposition, they're going to continue trying to defend their homeland, and you're going to lose? So what is this, a confrontation between Russia indirectly through Syria with the U.S. and its allies?
It's turning into that. Ultimately, it's turning into not only the crisis in Syria, but in the larger geopolitical and geostrategic standpoint, this is also going to be the problem with respect to the potential threats that you're hearing from not only the United States but Israel in wanting to bomb Iran. It's making Moscow increasingly uneasy in terms of the instability in the region, of which Syria is just one aspect of the larger problem that that Moscow is now seeing in terms of its own vital interests. For example, they are now moving troops, more and more troops, and modernizing their base in Armenia in anticipation of the whole crisis in the Middle East from Syria to Iran exploding. And of course, Russia has some major military assets in Syria itself that will probably come into play if the opposition continues the way it is right now and continuing to bombard unabated.
Well, let's look at another war that's happening, and that's the media war on this. And Professor Jastrzebski, let's focus on the role of this media, in which several reporters and producers of the Qatari government funded TV channel Al Jazeera have resigned over the role that is playing in fanning the flames of war. It's been accused of this media war machine by its former reporters. Let's listen what this particular reporter had to say about this.
The reality on the ground in Syria is different from what is portrayed by Al Jazeera. The reality is much different. The truth is now just an opinion of the director. In Al Jazeera, I can even lie to benefit the production. When I told them about my resignation, they sat with me for hours trying to convince me not to quit. But my mind was already made up. After I submitted my resignation letter, my decision was firm. I knew I wasn't going to retreat on my decision.
Professor Chesedovsky, you heard the reporter there, ex-reporter of Al Jazeera. What do you think? I mean, it does sound like the truth is being skewed, doesn't it?
Well, this is, of course, not an isolated phenomenon, Al Jazeera. We are bombarded with media lies on a daily basis. As an organization committed to truth in media, our research center is confronted with that on a daily basis. When I started investigating Syria, that was in fact shortly after I left the country in March of last year, the first reports were totally fabricated. And we had to find documentary evidence occasionally within the Lebanese and Israeli press, which confirmed unequivocally that they were terrorist acts right from the beginning, acts of arson, assassinations of civilians, well-organized brigades. And at that time, the media consensus was to say that this was a peaceful protest movement. And that consensus actually prevailed for quite a while. People were being killed by terrorists, and the media all over the world, and I listened to the Canadian media, the U.S. media, the European media, they were lying through their teeth. They were telling us that this was a peaceful protest movement, when in fact the so-called opposition were there with machine guns, and then they would twist realities upside down and say, no, these people who are killing are government forces, they're snipers, when in fact they were terrorists. So that it was an utter string of lies, of manipulation of images. They used the pro-government rallies in favor of President Bashar al-Assad to illustrate the resentment or opposition which was supposed to take place. When it all started in Dara, which is a small border city right on the border with Jordan, 45,000 inhabitants, there was no protest movement. There was no mass movement. This was the initial process of bringing in the terrorists, and they were right from the beginning attacking government buildings, killing the police and the armed forces, but also killing civilians. And then what we have is this very gruesome media ritual of actually acknowledging the death of civilians and then using those deaths of civilians by the so-called opposition forces and then blaming the government. So that is really the whole basis of this responsibility to protect. You go in with killer brigades, death squadrons, you kill people, and then after that you blame the government. That is not to say that the government doesn't bear some responsibility in the way it has handled this crisis.
Right.
But right from the beginning, the protest movement was not recognized, it was presented as a protest movement when in fact it was an insurrection.
And Issachar, it's incredible how far and to what extreme all these countries are going to make sure that their ultimate goal, which is regime change. And to add to what Professor Chesedovsky said, according to emails very recently obtained by WikiLeaks and the Lebanese English daily Al-Akhbar, U.S. government officials have requested that an American private security firm contact the Syrian opposition figures in Turkey to see how they can help in regime change. I mean, talk about what you said in continuation of undermining any hopes, including Kofi Annan's six-point peace plan.
Absolutely. I think they will do their best to undermine any peace mission that will bring a political solutions to the crisis in Syria. In reality, we've seen this in the past, and they will continue to do it. We're looking at this step by step. There has been a realization by the international community now that the armed militants on the group, on the ground, are committing crimes of mass graves and killing innocent civilians. Now, there's an international consensus that these groups need to have a stop and somebody should be responsible for them. It is a recognition by the international community that these armed groups should put their arms down in order to allow for a political solutions. It also undermines the oppositions in Syria, because the oppositions in Syria would like a political solutions to the crisis as well. So in reality, the countries like Qatar, Saudi, and some and Turkey and some Western governments are playing the devil's advocates. They are trying their best to undermine any political solutions. But then on the exterior, they are playing the role of the mediators or hoping for the political solutions to take place.
Right.
I'm going to bring in
Michael Malouf. We're quickly running out of time. Michael Malouf, what do you make of Kofi Annan? Do you think he's objective in this case in point? He said on numerous occasions yesterday, a few occasions that is, any transition should be a Syrian-led process which should not involve outside intervention and violation of his territory. He's got to be aware of what's going on the ground. He can't come out and say exactly in terms of his address to the UN. So given that, what do you think? Do you think he's aware of this and he's impartial?
I think Kofi Annan is trying his level best through diplomacy in as far as he can go. I think he's very aware of the realities on the ground, and I think he's under no assumption that any diplomatic approach is going to prevail. As long as you have the opposition being armed from the outside, he should be making a big, should be pointing fingers at those elements outside who are continuing to provide arms and support to the opposition. The Syrian government has every right to protect itself. As long as it's being shot at, it's going to shoot back. It's just
exactly.
That simple.
And I'm going to bring in Professor Chosudovsky for the final statement. Professor Chosudovsky, April 12, 6 a.m. Damascus time, a new page in Syria's history, do you think, towards political resolve, or is there going to be a continuation of violence?
Well, let me simply go back to the issue of Kofi Annan, which is very important. Kofi Annan is not a peacemaker. Kofi Annan is a war maker. He has stated his position on numerous occasions that it's the collaboration of the United Nations with NATO. And that goes back to 1999, to the Kosovo War, Kofi Annan. Kofi Annan was Under Secretary for United Nations Peacekeeping. He was then appointed Secretary General, and he was appointed by the United States. After they got rid of the previous Secretary General of the United Nations, so that we have to understand that Kofi Annan is also one of the main architects of Responsibility to Protect, which was endorsed by the United Nations. So there we have a situation where the United Nations is complicit in the so-called humanitarian war.
I'm so sorry. I got to unfortunately cut in since we're fresh out of time. I do apologize. Let me thank our guest from the Syrian Social Club, Issa Shire from London, former Pentagon official Michael Malouf. Thank you so much. And Director of Center for Research on Globalization, that was Professor Mikhail Chosudovsky, who was talking to us from Montreal. Thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any questions or comments, newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Mikhail Vitakwai and the entire team, it's goodbye.